Roberts, and welcoming you to this week's edition of TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that will bring you something old and something new this week. Our second hour will include an encore presentation of our conversation from January 2020 with Linda Day George. Linda Day George, star of Mission Impossible, Chisholm, The Silent Force, many of the shows produced by Quinn Martin, and an actress who most of you also will remember for her many appearances with her husband at the time, Christopher George. We'll replay our conversation with Linda Day George in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. Coming up later on this hour, we will bring you part two of a conversation that began a few weeks ago with Steve Randisi. Steve Randisi, author of Penny Singleton, a biography. Penny Singleton, of course, first actress to play Blondie on screen. We'll talk about how Penny nearly got fired from the very first Blondie picture she made after she had stood up to then Columbia Pictures president Harry Cohn. We'll also talk about her longtime connection with Rod Serling, including her appearance in 1964, one of the very last episodes of The Twilight Zone. Steve Randisi will join us. We'll talk some more about Penny Singleton later on in this hour. In the meantime, we'll begin our first hour by welcoming entertainment journalist, author, and comedy historian Tripp Hoetzel. Tripp's latest book, Norman Lear, His Life and Times, is the first comprehensive biography of the legendary Emmy Award-winning writer, producer, director, the man behind All in the Family, Maude, The Jeffersons, One Day at a Time, Good Times, many, many shows that had something to say when they were originally on and still have something to say today and still reach new audiences more than 50 years later. Norman Lear, the man most people would agree changed network television forever in 1971 with the premiere of All in the Family, although I understand, and this is something I learned in reading Tripp's book, that Lear himself was a little dodgy about whether he actually changed television or not. He said different things in different interviews. That's one of the things that fascinates me about Tripp. So we'll get into that in just a second. Much has been written about Norman Lear before and after his death on December 5th, 2023. However, Tripp argues that there remains a lot to learn about the legendary man in the white hat, particularly since Norman Lear himself was often reluctant to discuss his early life in great detail. Tripp talks about that and more in Norman Lear, His Life and Times. We'll tell you where you can find the book in just a second. Tripp Hoetzel, welcome to TV Confidential.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Ann.
There are two takeaways I got from the book. I'll start with those, and then, you know, we'll open up the conversation from there. In a lot of ways, Norman Lear is not unlike Rod Serling in that, even though he lived 50 years longer than Rod Serling, in a lot of ways, Norman Lear, at least I feel this way, is one of those figures that we think of in ideal form. We think of him as larger than life, maybe not beatific, but you know, we think of him in terms of the legend. You attempt to show the whole person, warts and all, and what particularly interests me is that you do a good job of showing the flamboyant Norman Lear, the salesman Norman Lear early in his career, the one that helped him get his footing in show business, and that seems to have been forgotten behind the social activist Norman Lear that most of us think of today.
Yes, well, that's very true. I mean, he was a definitely larger than life figure, and of course what sort of lit the fuse for him in show business was that he was a comedy writer in the early days of live television. He paired up with Ed Simmons, who went on, of course, to become the head writer and producer of The Carol Burnett Show, which ran on CBS on Saturday night, same night that All in the Family did, or what was known as the greatest night in television, in the 1970s. And he really had an idea for Danny Thomas, who was the hottest nightclub comedian at the time, to do a routine about words in the Yiddish language that have no other counterpart to English or anything else. And he managed to finagle his way in to get with a meeting with Danny Thomas by pretending to be a New York Times reporter who was on Deadline. And he called up the William Morris office, got the name out of Variety, called up the William Morris office and said, you know, I've just written a profile of Mr. Danny Thomas and I'm on the way back. My plane's about to take off. I have to ask a few questions. Can I get his phone number? And he turned it. He didn't call. He didn't actually talk to the agent. He talked to the agent's secretary. And the secretary gave him a number. Danny was so impressed by his audaciousness that he said, you know, what do you got for me, kid? And he said, well, it would read well. And it was a short bit. And then it turned out that Danny was looking for a piece to do. He was doing a benefit for the Friars Club that night at Syrah's, the very famous nightclub in L.A., and he wanted to do a, he needed a bit that night. And the bit went over so well that it lit the fuse. In the audience that night was Norman's cousin, David Susskind, the famous talk show host, who at the time was a packager for MCA. Neither one of them knew that Norman was in Hollywood at the time, but he got wind that Norman had written the show for Danny, written this, you know, this great bit for Danny Thomas, and David Susskind at the time was scouting talent, packaging talent for the Ford Star Review with Jack Haley, which was a new NBC variety show. And on the basis of that bit that he sold to Danny Thomas, that's what, you know, started his career as a comedy writer. He got him on the road as a comedy writer in the early days of live television.
And without realizing, Tripp, you just set up my next question, which is the other big takeaway I have for the book is not only is this a cradle-to-grave look at the life and career and the accomplishments and the legacy in Norman Lear, but in many cases, you do a good job of painting the picture, the stories, the backstory of the various key figures that Norman Lear worked with or crossed paths with one way or another, particularly in the first 20 years of his career before All in the Family made him a superstar. I mean, in fact, it's very difficult to write a book. It's difficult to write a book anyway.
You're kidding me. I had no idea about that.
Well, no, as you know, I speak from experience. But
I know you do. Of course
yeah,
you do.
But it's even harder to write a book where you've got more than one narrative going on. And while your main narrative is the life and career and legacy of Norman Lear, there are times when Norman kind of steps in the background, so to speak, and becomes a supporting character in his own book, because that is when you give the reader an idea of why it was a big deal for him to write for Martha Raye at the time. You know, why it was a big deal for him to write for George Gobel at the time. That sort of thing. And it's the context of all that. And I dare say Lear himself, if he had lived to see this book, we'll get to that in just a second. If he had lived to see this book, I think he would appreciate the attempt you made and the extent to which you succeeded in laying the context for all of his accomplishments in his life as well.
Well, I would hope so. I would like to think so. I mean, Norman was a personal hero of mine. I teach the only college class in the country on him at Emerson College in Boston, where I'm on the affiliated faculty. And I'm a pop culture historian myself, like you are. I grew up watching his shows. I love, you know, anything having to do with classic television in particular is, you know, old Hollywood, but old television in particular is really my sweet, sweet spot. And so I would hope that he would like this book. I wanted to do it as an affectionate but candid tribute to him, to paint everything for him. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to participate in the book, but he was just sort of at the end of his life and just didn't want to do it. I was not ever definitively why, but he did. His team gave me his blessing, and I got the blessing from his daughter Kate early on. Even though she wasn't able to participate either, and he did my class twice at Emerson College, and so I met him several times, and he zoomed over my class, and I also interviewed him for the 40th anniversary of TV, of All in the Family for TV Guide. So I had several interactions with him, and he was a wonderful guy, as you know, just as nice and down to earth as they came, and made you always feel like you were the most important person in the room. He always would say, you know, Ed, it took me a lifetime to get here, and I could be happy. So I would hope he would be happy with the book. Yes.
Tripp Witzel is on the line with us. Tripp is the author of Norman Lear, His Life and Times, the first comprehensive cradle-to-grave biography of the legendary television producer who, one can argue, was the very first behind-the-scenes television figure to become a bona fide celebrity in his own right. Norman Lear, His Life and Times, available now wherever books are sold. You can also find Norman Lear, His Life and Times, Amazon.com, where books are sold online. For more on Trip Hoetzel, TWPRCommunications.com, TWPRCommunications.com. For our listeners in the greater Southern California area, Trip Hoetzel will be coming to Los Angeles in January, I understand.
Yeah, so January 8th, I'm excited to be doing a signing at Book Soup to do the book, and we will have some fun surprise guests there, and have a great moderator, my good friend Jeff Abraham, who is one of the most foremost comedy historians in Hollywood. It will be moderating, and it's going to be a very fun night, so I hope you can all come.
Yes, and you can follow Trip, TWPRCommunications.com. Are you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook and all those usual social media channels. You can also look at my website, my book website, which is NormanLearBio.com.
NormanLearBio.com. NormanLearBio.com. That's easier to remember and, dare I say, a little easier to say live. But you mentioned a little bit, even though Lear did not participate formally as you wrote this book, you benefited from the fact that you had direct interactions with them on more than one occasion. So you got a sense of the person behind the legend, and that I'm sure helped you when you're writing. I understand that this book was almost completed when you learned the news of Norman's passing in December of last year.
Yes, it was, just prophetically. So this time a year ago, I was out at my house on Long Island. I live in New York City, but I was out of my home on Long Island, writing, putting the finishing touches on it. I had the book was delayed a little bit because two summers ago, I fell off my bicycle and shattered my elbow. I was fine. I was, wearing a helmet and everything like that, but it delayed me for about 6 weeks. But anyway, I was just finishing up the book when I heard the news, and my phone just basically exploded after I got the alert on scene, and everyone calling me because people knew, a lot of people, of course, knew I was writing the book, and I talked to class with Norman and Emerson, but even more so, they were almost like condolence calls to me. And then I was just trying to, figure out how to finish the book, even though most of the, heavy lifting had been done. I mean, Norman was one of those larger-than-life mortal figures that you just never think is going to pass away. Even though, of course, what's going to happen in the back of your mind, you just never think it's going to happen. And that's kind of what my mindset was. He was immortal to me.
And when you talk about how you got a lot of condolence messages, even though you were not a blood relative of his, people knew how important he was to you. I understand exactly what you went through because I got a lot of the same reaction when Jim Garner died 10 years ago.
Oh, I'm sure. Because I knew you knew him well. And I've actually had it with a couple of people. It was the same for me. I was always a huge Lucille Ball fan. And it was the same for me when she passed away in 1989.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought of it like that, Trip. But in my case, and I'm sure you can speak to this as well, when I thought about all the various people who came into my life because of my direct association with Garner or the fact that I wrote about his two greatest successes on television and how that touched a lot of people, that's when the personal connection really became clearer to me. And in the glimpse you shared of your story a few minutes ago and in the beginning of Norman Lear, His Life and Times, it sounds like that was much your experience as well.
Oh, very much so. And I think, when you are writing a biography, whether you know the subject or not, they are part of your life. I mean, they are your life for however long you're working on it. And so, and you don't ever really turn it off. I mean, you're sitting there, every day is a new challenge. You've got the computer, or the typewriter, as it were, whatever you write on these days, or, the legal pad if you write in longhand, and, you always start from zero. And, you keep going until you just can't go anymore, until you run out of gas. But you're always in the back of your mind, you never stop thinking about it. And so I think that's very true. When we write a biography, that the subject is our life for however long we're doing it. And I never really leave my wife. I mean, they're always a subject. They're always in your life forever.
Tripp Witzel is the author of Norman Lear, His Life and Times, available wherever books are sold. Norman Lear, His Life and Times, also available Amazon.com, where books are sold online. If you listen to us in the greater Los Angeles area, you can meet Tripp Witzel at Book Soup on January 8th. I don't have my calendar in front of me, so I don't know what day January. Actually, I guess it is a Wednesday because I know the 1st is a Wednesday, so therefore the 8th must also be a Wednesday.
Yes.
Math is a beautiful thing. You can see Tripp Witzel Wednesday, January 8th at Book Soup. To keep up with Tripp, to learn more about Norman Lear, His Life and Times, NormanLearBio.com, NormanLearBio.com. You mentioned how Lear was always a little guarded about revealing many aspects of his personal life, Tripp. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think, he didn't have an easy personal life. I mean, he had, his father went to prison when he was 9 years old for selling fake securities. So I think that really had a huge impact on him. He talked about it to an extent in his book, obviously, but I'm sure there was a lot he could have said that he didn't say, he didn't want to say, and it was just always gone. I think that really had a searing impact on him for the remainder of his life. You heard very little about all of his first wife, Charlotte, who he married right before he went off to World War II, and his oldest daughter, but very little is known about that. So he just, He was like many famous people, He wanted to keep his personal and private life and from his public image to professional image, life in two separate lanes. They're not, that's understandable.
That is very understandable. And in a lot of ways, he channeled the personal tragedies that he overcame early in his life. And in a lot of ways, he channeled that in his characters and in his work on television and all of his other creative stuff.
Oh, exactly. He had an uncanny, what he always used to say was finding the foolishness of the human condition, meaning that you could find humor in anything. And he talks very poignantly, in his book and in several interviews throughout his career, he talked about, the moment he discovered this, is right after his father had been arrested, his mother was selling furniture. They were living in Chelsea, Massachusetts at the time. And his mother was selling furniture because she just wanted to get the hell out of Dodge because she was so embarrassed about what her mother had done. And some stranger came up to him or some relevant came up and said, Norman, well, I guess you're the man of the house now. And he found that was so absurd. He's 9 years old.
Yeah.
His dad had just gone off to prison, been arrested, been on the cover of every newspaper in Boston, and has said, you're the man of the house now. And he said that's when he learned that you could find humor in just about anything.
One of the fun things for me, and if you don't know anything about his accomplishments before All the Family Folks, I believe you'll enjoy this part, particularly the first half of Norman Lear, His Life and Times by Tripp Witzel, is learning about his background in variety television, not only during the golden age of television in the early 1950s, but the golden era of variety television throughout the 50s. And our guest this hour is Tripp Witzel. Tripp is the author of Norman Lear, His Life and Times. Take a quick time out. We'll talk some more. Tripp, we come back here on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411. or visit FrontPorchRealtyGroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to TectonicLaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. TectonicLaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. That's 800-365-4216.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
Hi, this is Lee Merriweather, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson Law with our guest, Linda Day George. Linda Day George stars in Mission Impossible, The Gentle Rain, The Silent Force, Chisholm, and many other films and TV shows. Linda is working on a book as we speak. For updates on the book, you can follow Linda on Instagram as well as her fan page on Facebook. Linda's website, lindadaygeorge.com. Before we went to break, Linda and I were talking about her long association with the shows of Quinn Martin. Linda guest starred on just about every show produced by Quinn Martin, as well as many pilots and TV movies, including the FBI. You did about four FBIs, including one with Christopher.
Yes.
In fact, if I remember correctly, the FBI you did with Christopher was one of the first things you did after the two of you were married.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So you did the FBI as your honeymoon?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
You know, it's we're joking about this, but the amazing thing is you not only had a good marriage, a very happy marriage, but as we mentioned in our open, you and Christopher worked together a lot.
Yes, we did, and I loved it. And I know that he did too. We had a really good life together. We were terribly happy, mm-hmm. and we did everything.
So was it a matter of if you got a script and there's a character that, I think Chris would be good at this. Would you recommend it to him or his agent or the casting people, or did it just kind of work itself out naturally?
We generally had the same agent, and they understood that we really enjoyed working together.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a role that I was up for that he thought that Chris would be good in,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Okay.
let's do that.
Yeah.
So we did.
Okay.
We loved working together. It was fun.
You can follow Linda Day George on Instagram as well as her website, lindadaygeorge.com. Before we leave the subject of Quinn Martin, one of the other many other special people that you worked with as a result of Quinn Martin was Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Now, I know that because of the way the FBIs were written, you didn't always have a lot of screen time with Ephraim, although there was one episode where you played the villain. So
yes.
He arrested you at the end. So you had there's at least one scene you had with Ephraim. What memories do you have with Ephraim?
I tell you what, he was on the set a lot, almost all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And any time I was there and I could get a few minutes to chat with him,
mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved it. He was just a delight to talk to. He had such broad interests. He was a really intelligent person.
Mm-hmm. I'm nodding my head.
Yes. And I was just sometimes mesmerized by his intellect and the wonderful point of view that he had. I was really taken aback the first time, and then I could hardly wait to do it.
I talked to him on two occasions, Linda, including once on this program. And
uh-huh.
I don't know how else to say this. He made me feel smarter because he was talking to me.
Exactly. Exactly. I tell you, it was just the most wonderfully enlightening experience talking with him.
One of the other FBIs that flash in my head is one of the other people you worked with was Henry Silva. You did one where you spent a lot of time in a car.
Yes.
And you were driving around because of the way the story was. I mean, I think
you
played someone that Henry Silva kidnapped. But
yes.
Now, he's another interesting fellow because...
Oh, my, yes.
He is often typecast as a bad guy, but there's a lot more... I understand there was a lot more facets to him than that.
Oh, my, yes. He was a character, that
mm-hmm.
one. He was very funny,
mm-hmm.
and he had this incredibly... engaging way of having a conversation with you that all of a sudden you would look over there and say, who am I talking to? Wow, what an incredible person. He was really fun. He was really a nice man and such fun.
Yeah.
We had a great time in that car. And a great time was had by all.
Yes, great time was had by all. And then to go from one stream or another, you did a show with Bradford Dillman where I think you spent a lot of time on the hospital bed. So you go from driving a car to being in a sick bed.
Uh-huh. That was different. Bradford was... another really fine character.
Mm-hmm.
He had an awful lot to say, and I think he had a really great opportunity to say it, and he was a really, really nice person. I can't say too much about him because he's... You could talk about him all day long.
Yeah. Well, just listening to you talking about him, the image that popped in my head, and this speaks to the type of characters he often played, but stay with me on this. Whenever I see him on screen, it's like I can see the tumblers moving as if you're unlocking a combination of a safe, you know?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly the way I felt. Wow. Thank you for that. Now I know how to describe it.
Well,
and that was exactly correct.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we do provide a public service to our guests.
Thank you.
Okay. Linda Day George is on the line with us. Linda Day George sharing a few memories of her career in movies. And on television, we have an email question for you, Linda. This is from David, listening to us in Brandon, Florida. David asks if you have any memories of working on The Wonder Woman you did, which is one of the things you did with Christopher.
Oh, yes.
And so David asked, do you have any memories of The Wonder Woman you did, and do you have any memories of The Magician you did with Bill Bixby?
Oh, gosh, yes. Of course. The Magician was great fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
By golly. We got to be at the club in Hollywood, The Magician's.
The Magic Castle.
The Magic Castle,
yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I had a wonderful time on that show. And Bill Bixby was probably just the most delightful person. He could just thrill you
mm-hmm.
with the information that he had to share. I was constantly amazed by his willingness to share himself. It was really an incredible experience being with him.
I was told that he had a very dry sense of humor.
Very. I'll tell you something. Way back in the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
when we all first got to Hollywood, there's a famous, I won't say what house, there's a famous old house in Hollywood Hills. And Bill and Chris and about four other people and I got to, one evening we decided we wanted to know more about that house. So we got in our cars and we drove up in the hills and we got out and explored. And we explored this house from top to bottom in the middle of the night. There, of course, it was an empty house,
mm-hmm.
of course. But we had the most fun ever, I tell you. It was great. And he was the leader of the pack. We went all through this house, up and down, in and out. It was just wonderful fun, and we had a ball.
That wouldn't be the house that the Tarantino depicted in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? Or was it a different house?
It may very well have been.
Okay.
It may have very well been. But we did have so much fun.
Very good. I was also told that Bixby made one of the best martinis ever.
Well, I didn't drink much
okay.
at that time,
right.
So I wouldn't know.
Okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And
now,
about
Wonder Woman, yes, Wonder Woman.
David, that was so much fun. I got to, my German accent,
mm-hmm.
and I got to dress up. Oh, it was just great fun, and Linda was a delight. She was just a sweetheart to work with, and we explored the idea, she and I, of this going on for a long time. We thought this would be great. Fun. We could do this together, and we could do some stuff in Europe. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally thought the best Wonder Womans were the ones that were set in the World War II era, you know?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Of course, you know, the character you played, you're like the German Wonder Woman, so you get to,
yes.
You get to kick ass.
Uh-huh. It was great. I really had a great time. Chris and I laughed forever. So, David, thank you for that question.
Okay. All right. And we're having a great time talking to Linda Day George, a star of Mission Impossible. I read somewhere
yes.
that when you first came to Hollywood after you made The Gentle Rain, you had two goals as an actress. You wanted to do a Star Trek, and you wanted to do Mission Impossible.
That's right. And there I was. I was just amazed at that whole incident, becoming a member of the Impossible Mission Force.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously, I could not. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it was happening. And everybody was so kind and welcoming, and they were wonderful roles I got to play. Just amazing characters, and gosh, it was fun.
I understand that for an actor or for an actress, the great thing about Mission Impossible is that you play the same character every week, and yet your character plays a different character every week,
which means
Linda's playing a different character every week.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
And then also I got to play a character from outer space. I mean, thank you, Lord. I have to thank him every morning.
Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, to go back to how we started our conversation,
yeah.
when you look back on your life, when anyone looks back on your life, you accept the good and the bad, because that's all part of what makes you a person.
Exactly. Exactly right. We are the sum total of our experience.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, the ups and downs, make us. I mean, what a magnificent creature we are.
Mm-hmm.
That we have all of these years inside us. All of the time, all of the experience, the wonderful things and the tragic things, so we can be everyone else. We can be with them, knowing the pain, knowing the joy. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't be able to relate to one another. So I'm overwhelmed at the magic of life.
If we're lucky, we have one person to share our journey with.
Yes.
You had two people to share your journey with. And and going back to, you know, joy and gratitude, I mean, you know, it just getting to know you a little bit in our conversation right now, you appreciate the time you spent with both Christopher and Doug.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. They were the most magical times of my life, both of them. And I'll tell you truly, I miss them both so much. And they were close friends,
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent a lot of time together before I ever met Doug. And so I have to be so grateful that Chris brought Doug to me, and that the Lord brought me Chris was just magic. So.
And this has been a delight, Linda. We have so
Thank
many
you.
Hours.
Thank you so much.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. 800-365-4216. That's 800-365-4216.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life. But it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
Ed Robertson, with a reminder that the next edition of TV Confidential will premiere next week on this station at the usual time. Please join us as we welcome back entertainment legend Pat Boone. In the meantime, Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us as they bring us this week in TV history. Tony Seguin, as always, brought to us by our friends at Story Salon, Southern California's longest-running, regularly performing live storytelling ensemble. StorySalon.com, Facebook.com/... Story Salon. This particular conversation with Tony and Donna originally aired in January 2020.
All right, so let's start January 2nd, 1990.
Skipper!
That was when we lost the Skipper, and it is, I think, poetic that we refer to as the Skipper.
Well, I think up to the day he died,
he was.
He was. He embraced himself, that being Alan Hale Jr.
Yeah. And, I think there are very few that you know affectionately by the character name. I would say, if somebody was referring to Charlton Heston as Moses, there was a certain sense of irony or something like that.
Or Dead Cold Hands.
Yeah, Dead Cold Hands, something like that. But I would say, people called Al Lewis Grandpa until the end. I think Will Gear also had kind of the Grandpa thing. But I think there were certain people that they just knew as that character. They embraced that character. That's how, and they were cool with that.
And for a generation, we grew up with the Skipper, and he was a good man.
Yeah, he was, everyone described him. I've never heard an ill thing said about the guy. He was just a lovable teddy bear kind of guy, which is exactly what they needed for the show.
And he embraced the Skipper. I mean, even after Gilligan was long gone, Gilligan's Island was long gone.
I'm going to share a passage from Don Wells' new book, What Would Marianne Do?, which is available through our friends at Bear Manor Media. And as we mentioned a few weeks ago, Don, among other things, Don pays tribute to each of the cast members, and this is her tribute to Alan Hale. Every time Alan Hale hugged me, my feet left the ground. He was a big man in every way. The man was never, ever cranky. I understand that when he heard of the Gilligan's Island part, Alan was making a Western
in Utah, he rode his horse to the highway and hitched into Los Angeles for the audition. What you saw on film was what you saw in person. He could fill a room with his smile. A great guy, everybody's friend, so full of laughter and gentleness for his size. I never saw him angry or disgruntled. I think he was permanently gruntled, if there is such a word. No trace of a star's ego.
That makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that confirmed because, you, like I said, you never heard anything ill of the guy. He used to have a restaurant on La Cienega Boulevard when I was a kid that he would frequently be there to greet everyone.
It was Skipper Alan Hale's
Lobster Barrel.
Okay.
And on the sign outside, and I'm sure you could find it on YouTube somewhere, is a picture of him, pretty much the skipper, basically a sketch of him with the famous hat, and, you know, it's inside of a, you know, captain's wheel, like the opening of Gilligan's Island, and then the rest is a series of barrels as part of the decor, because these were lobsters fresh flown in from Maine daily, and he had an office not too far, and his office was a building not far from my elementary school. He had a car, and in the back of the car, you saw all sorts of literature for the Lobster Barrel. You saw a couple of spare skipper hats in the back seat. I mean, so you kind of knew who it was, and he made no secret. Yeah, he was a skipper. But you'd go to dinner, and you might meet the skipper there greeting you, you know, alongside the maitre d' and going from table to table. And, you know, for a kid, that was a really cool experience.
When I moved to Los Angeles, I flew in on a Friday. Saturday, a friend of mine was driving me around the city, and we drove down La Cienega, and I saw the restaurant, you know, Skipper Alan Hale's. I got so excited. Gilligan's Island has always been one of my favorite TV shows. Didn't know this existed, and my friend said, yeah, I hear he's there a lot. And I got starstruck. I mean, I've been in Los Angeles less than 12 hours at this point. I got so excited. And I'm kicking myself for never getting there.
Yeah, he was. Then the thing was, he was working. It wasn't like, you know, the poor guy is stuck, you know, shaking hands at a lobster place. He was constantly working.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, being whether he was playing himself as the skipper or playing the skipper in the reunion movies or like movies like Back to the Beach, or they wanted the skipper type, he did it and he
embraced it.
But
or as you would say, he owned it.
He owned it, yeah. But yeah, he would do a Love Boat where he was, you know, high up in the Princess Cruise organization.
Yeah.
Or, so I think the nautical element of him always stayed there. But he got to, you know, play a few other parts, you know, the cowboys and stuff. But, like I said, he owned it. And
well, what I'm thinking is, particularly in the last decade or so of his life, you know how Larry Hagman always wore the Stetson whenever he did appearances or television or whatnot? Much the same with Alan Hale. I mean, because he knew that was his role, and that was, I mean, people wanted to see that, and he gave me, you know, he would do appearances always wearing the cap.
Yes.
Yeah, George Lindsay, same thing with the hat, the Goober cap. He was cremated, buried at sea. Don Wells, I know, had talked about representing the cast at that time, and it became a big media circus. So I mean, you hear about these events and you think they're going to be a quiet, private ceremony, but he warranted the big helicopters and everything.
Well,
unfortunately, disrupting the ceremony, but you know, it's, you know, that does say something that this guy meant.
Well, a big man with a big heart deserves a big send-off.
Yeah, and he certainly got it. But you know, it's funny, you bring up somebody like him and people smile and they know him, and I would say like somebody like John Banner from Hogan's Heroes, also same thing, big teddy bear of a guy, tragic early life, but still it's like nobody ever said anything bad about him. It's like going to work with Santa Claus.
Yeah, and we've said this before, when enough people say it and pretty much confirm it, then it has to be true.
Yeah. John Candy, same thing.
Yeah.
Never ill word, just, you know, nothing but. But you mentioned the person's name, and obviously you can't see it. It might come out in our voice. but people just smile when you mention that person's name. So I think that is a true legacy for the man.
Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us as we remember the life and career of Alan Hale. Alan Hale, the actor known around the world as the Skipper on Gilligan's Island. Alan Hale passed away January 2nd, 1990, this week in TV history. This particular conversation with Tony and Donna originally aired in January 2020.
Let's move on to January 6, 1975. ABC debuted AM America.
AM America as opposed to Good Morning America. Although, just doing a little fact-checking before we started recording, this was the precursor to the show we now know as GMA.
Yeah.
Although it was an offshoot of a local show that originated in Los Angeles, I believe.
AM Los Angeles, which when I was very small was Ralph Story and Stephanie Edwards. Ralph Story stayed with Los Angeles Broadcasting until we lost him a few years ago. You had brought it up, and it's one of the first things I think of. He did a show on KCET, which is the
local
PBS
affiliate down here,
called Things That Aren't There Anymore, and it still plays.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have my VHS tapes of this show because there were two. Things That Aren't There Anymore and More Things That Aren't There Anymore. And they were playing it during the pledge drive, and Stephanie Edwards, who goes back, was there talking about Ralph and Ralph's widow. But it was all of these old things in L.A. that some people probably don't realize are long gone. Different Palisades Park, and they talked about Angel's Flight, which is, a kind of an elevator/trolley that would take people up a hill. You probably had something
incline.
Comparable. Incline, yeah. Incline. Thank you. And amusement parks like Busch Gardens and Lion Country Safari and things like that are long gone, which are very very nostalgic, and it was a wonderful show. But when they did AM Los Angeles, a lot of local stories, news, fluff, like you would see today. Keep mm-hmm. in mind, the budgets were not as big, and the technological advances were not that far. But they were just those people that you like.
You can enjoy Tony Figueroa's standalone podcast this week in TV history, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts. A reminder that Penny Singleton, a biography by Steve Brandisi, available through our friends at Bear Manor Media. You can also find it at Amazon.com, where the books are sold online. Also a reminder that Trip Witzel will be appearing at Book Soup in West Hollywood on Wednesday, January 8th, in conversation with our mutual friend Jeff Abraham. For more information, normanlearbio.com. Norman Lear, His Life and Time by Trip Witzel, available wherever books are sold through Applause Books. You can also find Trip's book, Amazon.com, where books are sold online. Ed Robertson, on behalf of Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen, Phil Grace, Greg Gerbar, and Susan Silver, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-239-0201. 800-239-0201. That's 800-239-0201.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Padron 60th Anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape. handcrafted by one master roller using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Invest in your future with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready or transfer eligible in programs like nursing, forestry, teaching, accounting, physical therapy assistant, computer information systems, and many others. Classes are free for full-time students with flexible hours and compressed 8-week options. Perfect for working adults. Ask about the many financial aid options available to help you turn your calling into a career. Spring semester begins January 13th. Enroll at ShastaCollege.edu.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.